The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting strategic. We are diving into the world of game theory, and our guide is one of its sharpest interpreters, the British mathematician and economist Ken Benmore.
And our mission here is, I think, a really important one. We're not treating game theory as this scary high-level math or, you know, just a playbook for poker.
Right.
We want to distill it down to what Benmore says it really is, a fundamental science for understanding strategic interaction in all its forms.
And that matters so much for you, the listener, because these ideas are absolutely everywhere. I mean, every important decision you make, negotiating a salary, picking a business partner.
Or even just deciding who's paying for dinner.
Exactly. It's a strategic interaction. Your best outcome, it always depends on what you think someone else is going to do.
And that's the key word, isn't it? Interdependence. That's what separates game theory from just, you know, simple decision making. It gives you a real toolkit to analyze these situations where everyone is trying to get their best result at the same time.
So let's start with the man himself, Ken Benmore. He's such an interesting figure because he seems to have one foot in the ivory tower and the other in the real high-stakes world.
He really does. He's one of those rare people who just blends the abstract and the practical so well. Mm. He's a top-tier British mathematician, an economist, a professor emeritus at University College London. And his academic work is foundational. I mean, he helped develop the Nash bargaining solution.
Okay, so he's at the heart of the field's history. Mm-hmm. But what does that dual background, you know, being a deep theorist but also a practitioner, what does that add? Why does that make him so credible?
It adds tangible, real-world proof. He's not just talking about theory. He's actually used it. I mean, the most famous example is he led the team that designed the UK's 3G telecommunications auction back in 2000.
Oh, wow.
We're talking £22.5 billion. That whole process was pure game theory, what's called mechanism design.
So he built a game.
He built a game to get the most value for the public and, just as importantly, to stop companies from colluding.
That's an incredible application. I mean, to design a system that allocates billions of dollars worth of assets proves the theory works when the stakes are literally as high as they can get.
Absolutely. And on top of all that, he's a brilliant communicator. He knows the jargon can be a wall, so he strips it all away and uses these really intuitive examples to connect the math to these, well, these deep philosophical questions about how we organize ourselves.
Which brings us right to the book's main goal. He wants to rescue game theory from this reputation of being like a cynical manual for tricking people.
Right.
And instead present it as this essential tool for understanding the logic of how we interact. So what's the basic structure he wants us to get?
Well, first, he just wants us to get what a game is in his terms. A game is basically any situation with two or more decision makers, he calls them players, where the outcome for me depends on what you do and vice versa.
So you need players, strategies.
Players, strategies they can pick from, and the critical part, payoffs.
Let's quickly define payoff, because it sounds like it's always about money, but it's not, is it?
Not at all. A payoff is just the value a player attaches to an outcome. Sure, it could be profit. But in biology, it's reproductive fitness. In a friendship, it could be happiness. It's whatever is motivating your choice.
And the book walks you through this architecture, from the basics all the way to the central idea of the whole field. The Nash equilibrium.
And the scope is just vast. It goes from economics to biology with evolutionary game theory and then even into philosophy. Trying to understand how a concept like fairness could have evolved in the first place.
It's really an invitation to see the world through a new lens, to see this constant web of strategy underneath everything.
Exactly.
Okay, let's dive into some of the core ideas Benmore explores. And we have to start with the most famous one, the prisoner's dilemma. We all kind of know the story, but what does it really teach us about conflict?
It reveals this tragic conflict between what's best for me as an individual and what's best for the group.
Right. The best collective outcome is for both prisoners to stay silent.
For sure. But for each individual prisoner, if you look at their choices, confessing is what's called a dominant strategy. No matter what the other person does, confessing gives you a better outcome, or at least it saves you from the worst possible outcome.
And because they're both thinking rationally, they're sort of forced into this outcome where both confess and both end up worse off than if they just cooperated.
It's the perfect metaphor for so many real-world problems. The nuclear arms race, for one, or companies getting into these destructive price wars, or even global environmental issues. It shows why some problems are just so hard to solve without some kind of external authority changing the rules of the game.
So, with all that potential for conflict, how do we find any kind of stability? Which I guess brings us to chapter 3 and the Nash equilibrium. Why is this concept so central to everything?
Because it defines the game's resting point. A Nash equilibrium is a state where no one person can get a better result by changing their own strategy as long as everyone else stays the same.
So my strategy is the best response to your strategy, and your strategy is the best response to mine.
Exactly. Once you're there, nobody has an incentive to move.
That's a key distinction, right? It's not necessarily the best outcome for everyone.
No, not at all. The prisoner's dilemma proves that. The Nash equilibrium there is for both to confess, which is a terrible outcome. It's just stable.
I see. So things like social conventions, they're just Nash equilibria.
That's a great way to put it. Driving on the right side of the road here is a Nash equilibrium. If you're the only one who decides to start driving on the left, you don't gain anything. In fact, you lose quite badly.
Right. It's a self-enforcing rule.
It is.
Okay, but what about games where you don't want to be predictable? Like bluffing in poker or random security checks. It feels like a stable strategy wouldn't work there.
And that's where we get to the idea of mixed strategies. In those kinds of high-conflict games, being predictable is a massive weakness. So rationality actually demands that you be unpredictable.
You have to randomize.
You have to randomize. A mixed strategy means you assign a probability to each of your choices, like a football team deciding to pass 40% of the time and run 60% of the time, but they don't know which it'll be on any given play.
And this is where John Nash had his huge breakthrough, right?
It really was. Nash proved that every finite game, no matter how complicated, has at least one equilibrium point. If you allow for these mixed probabilistic strategies, it was revolutionary because it guaranteed a stable solution always exists, even if it's hidden in what looks like randomness.
Let's make a big jump now. From human calculation to biology, evolutionary game theory seems like a whole different world. What does it tell us about rationality?
It tells us that you don't need a brain or consciousness to play a game. The core insight is that strategies can just be genetic traits, and the payoffs, their reproductive fitness, whatever works, survives and spreads.
So evolution does the thinking for the organism.
Pretty much. And this leads to the biological version of a Nash equilibrium, which is called an evolutionarily stable strategy, or ESS.
An ESS, what does that mean?
It's a strategy that, once most of a population adopts it, cannot be successfully invaded by a new mutant strategy. The established strategy is just too robust.
And the classic example to show this is the hawk-dove game. How does that work?
Okay, so imagine a population competing for a resource. Hawks are aggressive. They always fight. Doves are passive. They posture but retreat if a fight starts.
Okay.
Now, a population of all doves is unstable because a single mutant hawk would win every time and thrive. But a population of all hawks is also unstable because the cost of constant serious injury is too high.
So the stable point, the ESS, is a mix.
It's a mix. A specific ratio of hawks and doves, where the payoffs for being a hawk and being a dove are balanced. It's a stable equilibrium determined purely by the costs and benefits of fighting.
That's a really powerful idea. It almost feels like our own behaviors, maybe even our ethics, are just optimized algorithms from our evolutionary past.
That's the profound and, I think, slightly unsettling implication that Binmore explores. These things we call virtues might actually be highly effective strategic tools that solve survival problems for our ancestors.
Okay, let's pull back for a moment and try to summarize some of the biggest things here. What are the core messages that really change how you see the world?
Well, theme one has to be that the Nash equilibrium is the stable resting point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to remember that we don't always get there through, you know, hyper-rational calculation. Often it's just through custom or imitation or social learning.
Right. And that helps explain why some social norms stick around even if they seem inefficient, because the individual cost of being the one person to break the norm is just too high.
Exactly.
Mm.
Then there's theme two. Cooperation isn't some inherent virtue. It's a strategic problem. In games that are played over and over again, cooperation comes from enlightened self-interest.
This is the idea of the shadow of the future, right?
The shadow of the future, yes. A strategy like tit for tat, basically, I'll do to you what you just did to me, works because the long-term benefits of trusting each other outweigh the short-term gain from cheating.
It gives a rational basis for things like reputation and trustworthiness. If I cheat you now, I lose all future business with you.
And that loss is greater than the one-time gain. Absolutely.
And the third theme, which is maybe the most mind-bending, is that fairness has strategic roots.
Yeah, this is a big one for Binmore. He argues that norms of fairness are a kind of social technology. We evolved them to solve what he calls the equilibrium selection problem.
Okay, what does that mean?
So some games have more than one stable outcome. Imagine we have to split $100. We could agree on 50-50, but 90-10 could also be stable if I simply refuse to accept anything less. We need a way to coordinate on one of those outcomes without fighting.
So fairness is like a shortcut, a pre-agreed-upon rule.
Exactly. The old I cut, you choose rule for dividing a cake isn't just polite. It's a brilliant game-theoretic device. The person cutting is forced to make the slices as equal as possible because they know the other person will take the bigger piece. It implements a fair Nash equilibrium automatically.
Wow. It shows our sense of morality actually has a deep practical utility.
It avoids conflict and ensures coordination.
Binmore is so good at boiling these huge ideas down. Let's talk about a few of the core insights that really stand out.
Well, his definition of the whole field is just perfect. He says game theory is a formal science for understanding the logic of intertwined destinies. Its primary goal is to explain and predict stable outcomes. It just completely reframes it from how to win to how to understand.
I love that. And then there's the evolutionary one. The key insight of evolutionary game theory is that you don't need to be rational to end up behaving rationally. Evolution will do the thinking for you.
It's a beautiful line. And for anyone in business or negotiation, this one is crucial. A threat or promise is only credible if it would be in your interest to carry it out when the time comes.
Right. If carrying out your threat hurts you more than it hurts me, I know you're bluffing. It's not a credible threat.
And finally, back to cooperation. Cooperation doesn't require altruism. It just requires that the shadow of the future be long enough to make defection unprofitable.
A perfect summary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's make this really practical. If you, our listener, have this new toolkit, how can you start using it? Let's start with business.
Okay, auctions. You have to immediately think about the winner's curse. This happens in auctions where the true value of the item is uncertain, like, say, an oil field or even just a house. The person who wins is often the one who is the most optimistic, or, to put it another way, the one who most overestimated its value.
So winning the auction is actually a sign that you might have overpaid. The curse.
Exactly. Knowing this forces you to be more cautious, to bid based on your conservative estimate, not on the heat of the moment or the desire to beat everyone else.
What about bigger picture stuff, like public policy?
Well, game theory gives us the formal logic behind the tragedy of the commons, you know, where everyone acting in their own self-interest, overfishing, for example, depletes a shared resource and leads to a collective disaster.
And knowing that structure helps you design better rules, because good policy is just about changing the game.
It is. You change the payoffs. So instead of a free-for-all, you introduce something like fishing quotas. Suddenly, each person has an incentive to conserve their share, which aligns their personal profit with the health of the whole system. You create a better Nash equilibrium.
And what about closer to home in our personal relationships?
Well, you can use the framework for coordination games, like the one called the Battle of the Sexes. It models that classic dilemma. You want to go to the action movie, your partner wants to see the drama.
Yes, a familiar game.
Right. But the game structure shows that the biggest payoff for both of you isn't getting your first choice of movie, it's coordinating. It's going to a movie together.
So recognizing that helps you stop arguing about which movie is better and focus on the more important goal, which is just agreeing on something you can both enjoy.
It saves a lot of time and friction.
This whole analysis, especially that link between evolution and our social rules, has really changed how I think about why societies are the way they are.
For me, I think the biggest thing that stands out is that realization that fairness and morality aren't just these lofty, abstract concepts. They are social technologies. They're evolved, stable strategies that let us solve really complex problems and thrive as a species.
And for me, I think I keep coming back to the UK 3G auction. It's just such a powerful example of mechanism design. It proves game theory isn't just a way to describe the world. It's a tool you can use to engineer better outcomes, to create billions in real economic value.
So when you leave this deep dive, you really have a new sense. It's the ability to see the hidden strategic logic that's running underneath almost every social and economic structure you come across.
We really hope you enjoyed this deep dive into the strategic mind of Ken Binmore. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.